Welcome to the Life of a Gentleman podcast, the number one podcast that motivates you to be your best with conversations about business, fashion, and living the gentleman's lifestyle. We interview the hottest influencers, content creators, and business owners. And ladies, we know you're listening. This show isn't just for the fellas. It's about living your best life. And now, here's your host, award-winning author, entrepreneur, and modern-day gentleman, Richard Taylor. Hey, Rich, let's start the show.
Thank you for that introduction. And guys, welcome to another episode of The Life of a Gentleman. We have an amazing show lined up for you today. And let me tell you exactly why right out the gate. Matter of fact, let me ask you a question. Do you want to be a high achiever? I know the answer is yes. Do you want to know keys to success? I know the answer is yes to that question as well. Would you like to learn from somebody who has achieved some of the highest levels in professional sports and is now giving back to the community with his own school and program that is changing the lives of our next generation? You will probably answer yes. Today's guest has an amazing story that's going to blow you away. If you could only imagine being a young teenager on your own, no parents, no mother, no father, and raising a child at the same time, going on to excel as a high school basketball star, getting a scholarship to one of the most prestigious universities in our country, a basketball powerhouse, and then going on to work with Michael Jordan and the Jordan brand and winning an NBA championship to cap off an amazing career. And doing all that with a positive attitude, overcoming obstacles, overcoming injuries, overcoming doubters, and overcoming the past that sometimes we all think about. All of us have obstacles. All of us have things in our past that we are wishing we could change or that we are not proud of. Or sometimes it's just something that we view as a hindrance to our success, but there is a way that you can change your mental attitude and look at it as an opportunity to have stamina. And today's guest is going to tell us how to do exactly that. You're going to hear the story of how he overcame a lot of different obstacles and how he has remained positive and why that is really one of the largest keys to success. Get ready for an amazing interview, and you will not want to miss it. Let's get into it right now.
And now it's time for this week's segment of The Gentleman's News. Exclusive interviews with exceptional people discussing all things gentleman, from business to fashion to lifestyle, industry leaders, authors, and more. This is The Gentleman's News.
Guys, welcome back to The Life of a Gentleman. And today on the line, we have somebody that I'm excited to bring on because he's really doing amazing things and he is impacting our youth and really setting a beautiful course for the future. He is the founder of the Stamina Foundation. You may know him from NBA and NCAA. He is a champion in both arenas. He is a former NBA star, also starred at the University of Kentucky. I have the pleasure of welcoming to the show Derek Anderson. How's it going today, Derek?
Everything is A-OK.
Hey, I'm glad you started off with A-OK because I was going to mention that in the intro. And I really love what A-OK stands for. And I think that's something that you came up with. Let us know what that means when you say that.
Well, to me, I think A-OK stands for acts of kindness, not random, but all the time. What that is you create a habit of how you live. You think positive thoughts, you try to create a positive environment to yourself. You can brand that, you can build that off to other people. The people around you become off of that. The people in your circle and the people you work with. It's a positive reinforcement to yourself to build yourself up first. But you can't help anybody if you're not healed. So that's what we focus on, acts of kindness. And I always try to say that every day. So it stays in my mind, stays on how I live my life.
Yeah, that's a great reminder and something that all of us need to put into play, having that positive mindset. And it does affect others. But today we're going to talk a little bit about what you have going, because there's not enough good news out there. And you certainly are contributing to some good news because, like I mentioned, you started the Stamina Foundation. This is a school where you're giving back and you're training and giving people the tools that they need to really live a positive life. So go ahead and let us know about this school. What is the Stamina Foundation? Where it's located? How you came up with the idea, et cetera?
Well, what we do is we try to help kids from fifth grade and up, even some college students who come back to college to try to get themselves together. But mainly what it is life lessons, common courtesy, how to motivate yourself. You're always looking to be somebody else, trying to fit in from social media or from your classmates or your neighborhood. But we teach them to be their own self. You know, we teach them life skills, which means like we don't just talk either. We do life lessons. We do life scenarios. How did you get out of crisis? How would you handle the police pulling you over? How do you handle a negative teacher, someone who's next to you, who's doing wrong, doing crime? How do you handle that? Like, it's one thing to talk, but if we don't actually show them things, how are they supposed to know to get out of it? And I think that's what we've learned. We've lost in society is we don't have that anymore. A lot of the parents are not teaching that. And the school system has your kids, 6 hours? And if they play a sport, now that's 2 hours after that. So your kids with other people for 8 hours a day. And I think that's being overlooked. And I think for us at the program, we try to put them in a place where they feel like, you know what, we can actually learn life stuff here. So we're not just one of those after-school programs where you just babysit. Oh, put them in the gym, put them in class, let them draw. No, we're teaching you how to think for yourself, how to self-educate yourself, how to be positive in a crisis and not lose your mind, lose control. So this is a lot of life stuff that we teach, and I think it's really helped because these kids, they didn't know that they had certain things in them, and I think that's when you lose the kids, their mentality and their thought process, because they feel like everyone else has told them how to think except themselves.
Yeah, you know, why do you think that a lot of educators don't really focus on that critical thinking? Like you said, after school programs and things like that, you're right, they just kind of roll the balls out and set up the video game room and kids just kind of roam free. But you're kind of changing the way they think. What's been the impact of that when you work with the kids in that way?
Well, I think it's just the habits. I think what happens is people have habits. Imagine if you do something good for a long time. You'll be good at that. That's a habit. You do something bad all the time. What happens? You become a habit. And I think what happens is the teachers have come in a habit to saying, you know what, I'm just going to do my job and go home. When we grew up, it was like, you know, we could tell a school teacher could say, hey, you're not behaving right. Now, if you do that, the parent will come in and yell at the teacher.
Yeah, like, that's true.
You have to look at the whole realm of how we are. And I tell them, I said, if you want your kid to be better, then bring them here. If you don't care about your kid, you know, that's something that you have to do. But we want to give every kid that wants to be better opportunity to think for themselves, such as self-education. Like, I didn't have either one of my parents. And I say that because I could have learned a lot of bad habits from my parents. But because they abandoned me at age 10 and 11, I didn't have those habits. I saw them drinking and smoking. I've never drank and smoked. Like, I saw how it messed them up. So for me, it was not being in that environment. Sometimes it helps. And I want to give those kids the same thoughts. Like, if you want to come stay in my gymnasium, my class, we watch, we clean. I make them do light stuff. They learn how to cook. Now you get kids with a microwave. If they don't have a microwave, they'll say, ain't no food now. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, they're just like, well, there's no food now. There's a bunch of food. You just don't know how to cook. And no one's taught them that. You know, so I think it's just the life lessons that we've abandoned. But you want to teach them how to live life. But if you don't know how to survive and think for yourself, you're not going to survive in this world. This world is built on that. It's made off of anger. You know, the Lord, the God, whatever you serve, he built it off of love and compassion. But the world is being run off of hate and greed. And you can look at society and look at the media. I'll save somebody's life today. They'll have a little showing. Oh, ticket taker. But if I kill someone, I'm on the news for the next 20 years.
Yeah. Now, that's true.
Constantly. Yeah, and that's the way life is. So you have to realize that. But we have to teach our kids to live a positive life. So no matter what happens, your positivity stays first and foremost in their minds and on how they live. But if we don't teach that, they will never learn. It'll never be another conversation that everyone keeps throwing at our kids, and then we'll never get our kids to be better. Our generation is supposed to be better than us. They're going backwards right now.
Yeah, I find that to be the case too. And that's one of the missions of the show, to kind of highlight people that are helping change that narrative and doing things positive. Now yourself as a former athlete, you know, in the news recently, there's been other athletes opening schools, and in the past there's been a handful of athletes that have used their resources to give back to the community in such a large and impactful way. And now you've done it as well. So, I mean, we really have to tip our hat to you. But you said something about your background, how you got started. And to me, that's pretty astounding that you are able to see negative influences, but you turned your life around and went in a positive direction, so much so that, you know, you have the acts of kindness and now you're teaching life skill to youth. Take us back to the beginning. Why do you think you decided to go the direction that you went instead of following, you know, the negative patterns that you saw going on around you?
Well, it's simple. What I did was I smiled and I asked, and I was nice to people, if I could get jobs and everything else. And when I smiled, they gave me a job. You know, when I was polite and I'll say yes, ma'am, or yes, sir, they gave me a job. I watched other guys be like, yeah, this, nah, then they got attitudes. They don't want to brush their hair. They don't want to look clean. And then they're like, man, don't nobody want to help. Well, look at your attitude. I learned that at age 11 years old. I was nice to people. They gave me jobs. What other common sense thing do I need to learn? Like, I didn't have an education. I didn't have a college degree. All I had was common courtesy. That's easy to teach, but they don't teach it.
Yeah.
And therefore, that was my life when I grew up. And when I was, the first job I had was working at a grocery store, and I asked people to carry their bags for 5 or 10 cents. I smiled after each one, and I said, thank you, sir, ma'am. Every time they come to that grocery store, they were looking for me. So they could feel I was giving them positive energy. They were like, this is such a nice young man, I'll help him out. That's all I did. There's no playbook, there's no script. It's be nice to people. People will treat people good when you're good. That's simple. That's always going to happen. People always treat people nice in a good format. If nothing else, they won't be rude to you.
Yeah.
Blue moon, you'll find that rude person is just rude because they're miserable themselves. But 99% of the time, if you're positive or polite, people are using me that way back to you. Not unless you may be in New York.
Yeah, that makes
sense. People want to go so much. Yeah, people want to go. They don't have time to be nice. But most of the time, if you're nice to people in a setting or just around them, they'll respond in that way. I've seen people be upset all the time. So, but to take it back to then, that's what I focused on as a kid. So when I was doing that, at 11, and then I worked at a candy store, and I told him I had a son at an early age, and I was a single dad at 15, and I needed extra hours. And he was like, oh, wow. Well, you're doing a great job. Let me give you extra hours and extra pay. So instead of him giving me, like $5 an hour, I was making, like, $9 an hour. So I'm working at a candy store, almost making $10. I'm 15 years old. That's great money for me when I got a son.
Yeah, now take us back, though. Now, because a lot of the listeners, we kind of glossed over this, and I don't want this to get lost, because you said, I want to make sure I heard right and that they heard right. You were abandoned at 11, so at 11, you're working at this grocery store. How does that work? I mean, you know, I have a 12-year-old. I don't think they could handle that, but okay, set it up for us.
You don't want to talk to them that.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, set it up for us.
Like, you think about when I was taught, we were left at home several times.
Okay.
I had an older brother, and we were left at home several times, so we had to cook. Like, we were making potatoes and put stuff in the oven, like toast in the bottom of the oven. It's the 80s, so you know I'm older.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like we learned to cut potatoes, season them up. We learned to make spaghetti. We was putting in that beef stew. Like, we learned how to cook it, but we were watching things as we were kids, and we watched. They told us to come in here and learn how to cut this for me, make this for me, like your great grandmother's out. And then when we moved into projects in the West End of Louisville, it was like, okay, now what? Now we got to survive. So I stayed up other people's houses, took people's trash out. They asked me to do something, I would do it. I was house to house, and a lot of project kids was like that. They didn't have somewhere to go, and family members weren't there, and every blue moon you get to see somebody you knew, but they had other family problems, so it was like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Basketball took on a whole life for me, so it was like, at the age of 11, I came home to an empty apartment. My brother had ran away from home a few months earlier. My dad had already left out of a relationship with my mom. Then my mom came home to the empty apartment, she just left.
and you had no idea. You had no idea where they were at this point, right?
No, I hadn't seen neither one. I seen my dad live in the same city for 20 years.
Wow.
Yep. See, my mother, I seen her my graduation, which was 7 years later. And then I saw her maybe, I think, I see at my great-grandmother's funeral in 96. And then I didn't see her again until like 2000.
Okay, so man, we're setting a nice little timeline, but you jumped up, okay. Obviously, you like sports, or you got into basketball in high school. So at 15, I believe you said you had a son. Is that right?
Derek Jr.
Derek Jr., okay. Now, how does that work as a basketball star, a student, and now a father? Were you and his mother together trying to raise the child, or are you once again on your own?
She got arrested for shoplifting, so I was single dad. So I was working with him, his aunt, and I was just trying to figure a way out. Like, I would work jobs, get him, take care of him. And then when she got out, we split custody. And we just kind of made it work. But I had a lady next door in this old apartment. I used to come over, and she's watching. So it was a little chaotic. But we were in a project, so it was like everyone else didn't have anything, but we would all help each other. Like, I would need stuff, and people would give me food, canned foods, and they knew my situation. But it was all about making sure we all helped each other.
That's beautiful, man. That's a real community coming together.
What I miss. We didn't have nothing. It was a project, but we had each other.
Yes.
Now everybody's trying to steal and beat each other. I got a George on. I got a phone. You dirty. It's like, dude, help them not be dirty. Don't talk about it. Like, this is different. Like, yeah. We cared about people doing looking bad. We didn't want you looking bad. Like, a lady would say, come on, son, clean yourself up. Now you say that to a kid, he liable to cuss the lady out.
Or worse, man.
Some of your pusher, yeah, so... But we try to bring the reality back. Like, if you treat people good, you'll be treated amongst those are good people. Don't fall into that believing that negativity and that, because that'll take you out of here.
Yeah, you
show those scenarios.
Yeah, you definitely had to have a positive attitude because you had a lot on your plate. I mean, your plate was full. Obviously, you were highly recruited. Kentucky is a basketball powerhouse. Everybody knows that. I mean, so how does that work? How did that work out as a father heading into the University of Kentucky, juggling a busy basketball schedule? And you were able to stay positive through it all. Were these kind of the foundations of the stamina foundation being built there?
Yeah, it was. And my Uncle George, who taught me how to be a man, he came to my life when I was in high school, and he taught me all the ins and outs about being a good person, how to be a man, how to stand up, how not to make excuses. So he was my father figure to me, and for him telling me how to live my life, how to be a man, that just enhanced my survival mode, because I stopped saying, well, woe is me because my parents, and I just stood on my own 2 feet. I was already working to survive, but now he told me how to thrive. And don't just survive, don't just get through day to day, prepare yourself for greatness. He kept telling me, be great. And I was like, wow. Then Muhammad Ali became my mentor. He would always, you would see him around the city, and he'd tell people to read books, and he'd make you do this, this, and that. And it was like, well, man, that guy's from here, so I could be just as good as him. Every time he would see people, be great, you know, be the greatest. And I was like, that motivated me to every day that I had to be a strong man to be great. I didn't want to fit in. I didn't want to just say, I'm going to go to work 9 to 5 and come home. No, I wanted to do more. If I worked a 9 to 5, at 5:30, I was playing basketball. At 7, I was reading. At 9, I was, you know, doing something else, doing push-ups and sit-ups, and then to go to bed and do it all over again. I never, like right now, I don't stop. I don't never want to stop, because I don't know how long I've got on this earth, but I want to leave something more than my name when I leave.
Yeah, man, and you know what? You said something a little bit ago. It just kind of blew me away. You said it so nonchalant, but Muhammad Ali is you know, definitely one of the most well-known and well-respected athletes of all time. And for him to be your mentor, it's all starting to make sense. I mean, what was it like learning from somebody of his stature?
Well, he was always good to everybody. So I think he mentored people when he didn't even know what he was doing. Like, he was always
true.
Talking to people, and you know what I mean? It was like, when he'd say something, everybody in the world would be like, well, I'm going to do what he said.
Yeah.
You know, so he was that type of person. So he, like I said, making people read books, making people stay focused on being themselves. His conversations before he actually lost his whole voice. Like, he came to a Kentucky game and sat on the bench at the end of the bench where I was at. So it was like, it was super cool, man. It was just like, you just can't get any better than that.
No.
I mean, just for him, then reading up on seeing what he did, and I was able to research more, and just knowing what he stood for, man, motivated me. And just for him to be around in my circle and to see him, and just to know his presence. Like, you didn't, when he stopped talking, I still felt his presence. It was because I knew what he would already stood for. I knew what he thought. I knew what he had already preached. I knew what he had already showed in his character. Like, he cared for people.
Yeah.
And that's what I do. I care for people.
Yeah, that matters, man. That definitely matters. And you know, all these wonderful things that you're talking about comes down to your attitude. Just like you said at the beginning, having that positive mindset. And I want to ask you something, because I know you did also worked with another person who everybody knows, definitely another one of the top greatest athletes of our time, Michael Jordan. I mean, you had a chance to work with the Jordan brand during your career. Yo, again, rubbing shoulders with somebody like that. I want to ask, because there's a lot of people on social media in particular, they all want to have brand collaborations and meet these different people and work with them. What was it like working with Jordan, and how did that come about? Is it also attributed to your positiveness?
Yeah, what's funny is I tore my ACL at my last year in college, and I came out and went to Nike, and I walked in a room. It was Phil Knight, Michael Jordan talking there, and then I walked in and said, "Hey, DA," I'm like, "Wow, Michael Jordan know who I am? Like, well, how would he know me?" But you know, of course, you get a pro, you watch college as well.
Mm-hmm.
He was starting his brand. He said, "Man, I'm proud of you. I'm glad your knee is better, and I want you to be the first guy to represent my brand." And I'm like, "Now, you do know I tore my right two ACLs up in college, right? Like, you know that. This is called Jumpman." And he said, "Don't worry about it. I know you're healthy. And I know you can play. But I want you because I know how your character is. I've had everyone talk to me, told me about you. And the first thing they talk about, he's a high character guy. And that's what I want to represent my brand." I was blown away. Because I wouldn't give a guy who had two ACLs, one on each leg, a contract.
Yeah, I hear
like,
you.
Consider Jordan. Like, why would you give me that knowing I tore both ACLs up in college? And I'm going to the NBA, where it's grueling, it's hard. This man gave me a life. I asked for a lifelong contract. I might not get paid, but I get free gear for the rest of my life. Shoes and gear, I get the free for the rest of my life.
Yeah, you know what?
I negotiated. That was a self-entry. That was what I decided. I didn't want all the cut money. I knew I had a survival mode, and it was a build. I got my first Jordan shoe store. I still give free shoes and clothing away to kids who don't have it, so they ain't out here robbing and stealing. So it's just that process. So I saw the future in that, and again, he picked me because of character. Had nothing to do with my game. He liked my game. But two ACLs, that wouldn't be a good business decision. But guess what? 11 years in the NBA, won a national world championship, and I represented shoe brand.
Yeah.
In a positive format. So he picked me because of my character.
And you know what? That's the thing, man. It comes down to how you carry yourself. People respect you for how you carry yourself. If you carry yourself, you know, this show, The Life of a Gentleman, you know, if you carry yourself that way, positive, look what can happen. I mean, the fact that you had all these experiences, and now it's still bearing fruit. You're still giving back this time later.
It always does that. You'll always be able to impact the world for later. People just see now. I could have easily took all that money and wouldn't thought about lifelong, but I saw the future. I saw what I could do later in life and help other people, and it's come to fruition, and I'm able to do that. You have to see more than what you see for yourself. That's not what life's all about. You didn't make it. You weren't even born on you by yourself. Somebody had you. You didn't have a say-so when you came in this world. So you always need someone else, and you also always want to make sure that you help someone else out. It doesn't have to always be. It's not always about money, dude. Just give somebody some love sometimes. That can get people through the day.
Yeah, just encouraging them. It feels good. It makes you feel good, too, you know, just to see you put a smile on their face. Yeah. Yeah, and so...
That fake tough stuff don't work no more. These people think it's all cool, look dusty, and don't comb your hair, and walk around with a frown, don't smile when you take a picture. I said, that don't mean nothing. You looking all mean. What does that do? That didn't help nobody, and you didn't get nothing out of it. So why do it?
Yeah, this is a good point. I mean, the fact, I don't know what it is with, you know, not to sound like the old man in the room, but, you know, this generation, they tend to thrive off the negativity. I don't know if it's a badge of honor or whatever the case may be, but, you know, like you said, it's been my experience, doors open just by being nice to people and having a smile. It just really makes a huge difference in your life.
It's this world we live in. I told you it was built off love and kindness, but it's being run off of hate and greed. It's just this world. It's just the world we live in. It's what the system is. That's why you need a spiritual compassion for yourself, a spiritual understanding, and then you have to have your own self-love. If you can't love yourself, don't expect other people to love you. If you walk around here with attitude, don't think somebody's going to smile at you.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Nothing's going to change.
Yeah. So let's look forward to the future now, because, I mean, you've got the school set up. And let everybody know where the school is located. But what's the future looking like for Derek Anderson?
Well, I want to create this school in all colleges and high schools all across the world. Anybody has a school, I think this is something we need, because you'll teach them how to do 2 + 2, but you'll never tell them how to get 2 + 2 on a check. Like, he can't get a job because of his attitude, but you know how to count.
Yeah.
He can't go to a job and say, yes, sir, and introduce himself. He can't have a clean look and presentation about himself. He can't understand. I do these scenarios, and if you and I were going for a job and you and I got the same degree, the same clothes, and I said, yes, sir, and you said, yeah, who's going to get the job? The one who said, yes, sir. That's what people base it on. They got to trust you to run their company. So if you don't understand the simplicity of that stuff, you don't think you're going to get anywhere. And I think that's what I want to put in colleges and schools. We've lost common courtesy. We've lost people skills. So until we get those two back, I think we're going to always be in trouble with our generation. So that's what I want to do, is put it in colleges and put it in high schools and middle schools and teach them how to be people. Teach them life skills. You got to pay rent. You got to pay taxes. Stuff that they don't teach us. Teach them life so they can survive.
Yeah.
Putting these kids in this world with no survival skills, and all of a sudden you look at crime going up, poverty's going up. How's poverty going up and everybody's got Jordans and phones up? That makes no sense. You got a cell phone, but you're in poverty.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's self-education. They don't self-educate anymore. We need to do that.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. It's ironic sometimes. I saw somebody that was homeless the other day on the corner asking for donations, asking for money, and they actually had an iPhone, you know, and they were on the phone while they were requesting, you know, people to help them out. And I just, it's like an oxymoron, but man, we could talk all day about that, but
I know, right?
how about basketball wise? I know you still do some work with kids there too. Do you still have a lot of joy in doing that, just as well as educating?
Oh, absolutely. That's fun, because I teach them the IQ part of the game, which most of these, even NBA players, don't have. You'll see a guy switch on the same size. He's a smaller guy. He'll come back and set the screen on him, and he'll switch right back. I'm just like, you're an NBA player, you don't know that? Like, that's the IQ of the game that I love teaching. When I teach the game, they're like, Coach, this is easy, man. I never thought of that. And I'm thinking, like, yeah, it's called boxing out.
Dude, they don't even teach. Wow.
You know what I mean? Like, this simple stuff. Like, LeBron falls over his free throw line, and no one on the coach's staff tells him to stay in his shot. All you have to do is stay in your shot, shoot the same way, and it becomes natural. But if you shoot 3 ways in practice, you're going to shoot 6 ways in a game. Nothing is consistent. But no one teaches the IQ of the game anymore. So I love teaching IQ, the fundamentals, and everything about the game. People don't realize Michael Jordan had the best fundamentals in the game because he went to college. He grew up into his athleticism. That's when he became the greatest player. A lot of these kids don't ever have fundamentals, so therefore they just rely on athleticism. Why do you think all these overseas guys are taking our jobs in NBA?
I've noticed that. A big influence.
They're not more talented. They're just smarter. They know how to play. They know how to play in a system. They know how to play smart. They're not a threat. They're not hurting. You look at all these European players now coming and taking so many American jobs. Like, it's because they're smarter. They play harder. They play together. All these AAU dudes want to dribble the air out, and a lot of it is the parents and the coaches. AAU coaches, all they do is scream, cuss, and then tell them to go one-on-one. The only time to tell them to rotate on defense, they didn't know what to do. Why you think Duke was in a zone the whole end of the season? They had Bagley, Duvall, Trent Jr., and them two bigs, the most athletic team in the country. But they all played zones or they trapped it in high school, so they didn't know how to play man to man in college.
Yeah, no, you're right. You don't see that a lot these days.
You coaches just want to win. They want to win and get paid, and that's all they care about. They say, oh, no, I represent this dude. But did you get him better IQ-wise? Did you help him be a better person? Like, watch how many guys when you watch. Like, my kids, when one person falls, all four go pick them up. The only team I've seen do that in the last 2 years is Villanova, and there's no secret why they win.
Yeah, now that's
watch,
true.
You know, watch your team fall down. Watch a game when if one person falls, watch maybe one come. Not the rest of them. They all got their own thought process. All they care about is me. What does my look like? What do I got to do this? I'm already looking around. I'm throwing up signs to the air. Come on, man. This not a shit. The NBA is not like it used to be. I'm trying to get it back to where it's a showcase and not a show.
I like that.
Right now, it's a show.
It is a show. It's a lot of one-on-one. It's a lot of standing around, and sometimes it's boring. You know, as exciting as the NBA can be, I'm a huge NBA fan, but a lot of times you just watch a midweek game, and it can be boring because it is a lot of one-on-one. There's no ball movement.
Yeah.
You know,
no fun to it. No, like you should be on the crush. Ooh, that was nice. That was a great pass.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like you said, it's just boom, beat the air out of the ball. Then they shoot 100 terrible shots.
Yeah, a whole lot of long distance three pointers, and
man.
Yeah. Now the game's definitely changed, but it's nice to know that you're preaching the fundamentals, because like you said, that's the cornerstone of the game. Without that, I mean, it's just playground basketball, and that's not what people want to pay to see. I mean, I like to see the highest skill.
You couldn't dribble with the ball when all of us playing pickup. You want to score.
Yeah.
That's what I said. It's a show.
It is.
The NBA is looking like more of a show than it used to look like. Like, I still like watching Golden State, even though, but they pass the ball.
Yeah, they share.
They pass the ball. Like, I watch Boston. I like watching because there's a college guy who came to the pros.
Yes.
He understands ball movement. He understands making defense move. Like, they don't do that. He come down and shoot all the balls. And come on, man. You got to move.
Yeah, I follow the Detroit Pistons, so there was no movement last year. It was pretty painful to watch, man.
Here's the thing. I want a coach, and they won't give me a coaching job. And why you think what they think? Why won't they give me a coaching job? Everybody's like, well, why won't they give the guys who know how to play a coaching job?
They probably told you didn't have the experience. You know.
That's exactly what they told me. But I said, well, can any of your point that your guards or your coaches tell this player how to fight over a ball screen? Sure. They don't have a clue because they've never done it.
Yeah.
So you got little coaches on the team that are like 5'9" coaching. Tell him to fight over a screen. Tell him to fight over Shaquille O'Neal or Patrick Ewing or Scottie Pippen's screen. Tell him to show me. And then he say, well, he knows he watching film. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Because you got experience because you're watching film. Come on, man.
That's
what I'm saying. The game is lost because of the politics.
It is.
Like, if I get an opportunity in the NBA to coach, man, I'm going to change all that. I'm going to get my guys who know how to coach and get them coaching jobs so the NBA be better. You got to have a chess match, not a dang on checkers. It's like, well, it's your jump, your time, your jump.
Yeah, right, right. You
get waved by to go to the rim. Man, LeBron did so many easy dunks. I'm like, dang, where's the body at? Ain't nobody back there?
Had nobody. He have a clear lane to the hoop sometimes.
I mean, it is crazy. I ain't never have no clear look. Man, I was coming in there, I had to dunk on somebody because somebody was waiting on me.
Yeah, that was the era, though. That was a different era, man. Things have changed, Derek. Things have changed.
Super has changed.
Hey, yeah. Before I let you go, since we're talking hoops, man, I just want to know, you talked about liking the high IQ guys. Just throw out a couple guys that you played with or against and who had high IQ. Maybe we didn't realize it and we didn't give them enough credit at that time because that's my era.
So everybody.
He said everybody.
I can't think of nobody who did. Yeah, think about it. Nobody had IQ.
Yeah.
Think about it. When I play, here's our point guards. You had a Baron Davis, Chauncey Billups, mm-hmm. Allen Iverson. Who else was it? Sam Cassell, Nick Van Exel. Like, those guys could absolutely score and assist. Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, Steven Franchise. He was more of a shooter, though. He wasn't an actual point guard, but he still knew how to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when those athletic point guards, here's the two guards, Reggie Miller, Michael Jordan, Mitch Richmond, Kobe Bryant, Eddie Jones, Ray Allen, Mike Finley. Like, you look at that game, everyone could play at different positions because we knew how to play. Like, we didn't have the dominant guy just bring the ball up the whole time.
Right.
Like, there was none of that. Like, if you got the rebound, go. Now you get a rebound, you see guys waiting on people to throw the ball.
Oh, they looking.
There you go. I know how to bring the ball up.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Yeah, they get the rebound, and they look for the guy and get it to him. And then three of them run to a corner or, you know, spot up behind the three-point line. And it's like, it's just a, I don't know.
I'm with you, man. It's tough watching.
But you know what?
I'm hoping we can get it back like it should be. They don't develop these kids. That's the problem.
Yeah, you're right. And if they don't catch on, I mean, it's going to be the same old teams having the success because, like you said, those are really the ones moving the ball around, creating opportunities for everybody, pushing it up court. And, you know, all this stopping and standing around and waiting behind the three-point line is not working. So I think people are going to have to catch on. And I hope you get your chance if that's what you want to do. I really hope you get a chance to put your footprint down in the NBA as a coach because I always say, why don't we have more former players on the sidelines and also as GMs? You guys can evaluate the talent better, but we need more.
Better than them.
Yeah,
here's the thing. We're there, but they don't let us say anything. Look behind the bench.
There's
a ton of NBA players.
You're right.
But then you look at the bench, and they got dudes who've never there's a person, I won't say the name, but they played softball or baseball, and they're on the bench of an NBA team.
Mm.
Why? How is that? But you're talking about experience. Man, it's, come on.
Yeah.
We know what this is. We're just trying to kick the door down like any other job in the other company. They don't want certain players because we know way more basketball than they do when they're picking up some of these draft picks. Like, why would you draft a guy who can't do X, Y, Z? Like, you got to get someone. There's so many other players that are better than them because of the hype. They're picking people.
Everything's potential. I get tired of hearing potential. In 3 years, in 4 years, he's gonna be something. Man, we need to win now.
To stay in school. Right, then he'll be good in 3 years.
Exactly, man. Good. Man, Derek, I appreciate your time, but hey, before you go, I won't keep you. I could talk about basketball all day. Please let us know about the book, how we can get the book, and also how we can follow you and kind of support the Stamina Foundation and everything that you're doing.
Well, Stamina is the name of the book. You can go to Stamina FD. Stamina F is in Foundation, D is in Derek, .com. And you can see everything that I'm doing. I'm doing a lot of movement. We don't need money. You know, if you get money, it'll be donated towards the Acts of Kindness gift card. So if a kid does something nice, then we'll be able to reward him with that. We're not giving money away just to be giving stuff away. They got to earn it by being nice. So that's what my foundation is about. We don't have anything saved. Whatever comes in, we give to the kids and then let them work and earn life things. So you can find me on StaminaFD.com. You can go all over my site. It's under Derek Hill Anderson Sr. And that's where I'll be. I'm always promoting, having fun, and being kind. And I do some things that just out of the blue, just say, hey, whoever does something nice to somebody, I'll send you some joy. You know, stuff like that. And I think that helps guys just try to create a new habit and look of how they act and being cool. So that's where I'm at, and I'm always here.
All right, man. We appreciate it. And some ears perked up when you said you get a pair of Jordans, man. That's you get kids ear when you say that. So, man.
Yeah, anything like that.
Yeah. But just want to say thanks once again for your time. We appreciate you sharing your story and also inspiring us and just encouraging us also to have these random acts of kindness. So thank you once again for joining us on The Life of a Gentleman.
Thanks so much, Ray. Have a good one, buddy.
Guys, that's going to do it for this edition of The Life of a Gentleman. We are so glad you could join us. Before we close out, we have to give a special thank you, really, to our guest, Mr. Derek Anderson, for coming on and letting us know all about his journey and what he's doing with the community. Really, that's something that all of us can strive for, and I got a lot of good takeaways from it. I hope you did too. We appreciate his time and what he does for the community and for the next generation. That's so important. So thank you. Also, if you would, guys, please, would you just rate, review, and even subscribe to the podcast? And the reason we ask this is because it's going to help us get this message out to other people that may be interested in the show as well. And also, it'll just take a minute of your time. So it will benefit us. It will benefit other people. And we'd sincerely appreciate it. Just go on iTunes, leave a rating and review. Just takes a second of your time. Also, don't forget about the free book, From Idea to Income. I know a lot of you are aspiring entrepreneurs. You can get that free book by going to thegentway.com and downloading your free copy. So don't forget that. That's also a special way that we want to say thank you to you, the listener, because without you, we wouldn't have a show. And we're definitely trying to make this the go-to podcast for motivation, inspiration when you're talking about the world of fashion, business, and lifestyle, and to hear from people who are living this life of a gentleman. And don't forget also, if you leave a review, send me a DM at Gentleman's Podcast or at The Life of a Gent. If you leave a iTunes review, send a DM and I have a special gift, especially just for you. So guys, we have an exciting show lined up for you next week. We will be talking with somebody who's doing big things in the world of fashion. Also, we'll touch on a little bit more of entrepreneurship. And I definitely know you will be inspired because these guests have amazing stories to tell that are going to blow you away. So stay tuned next week. And as always, until next time, take care.
These messages are brought to you by Harrison Blake Apparel, specializing in fashion accessories such as ties, lapel pins, and much more. Join the monthly subscription club where you will receive one necktie and four accessories for $25. To learn more, visit harrisonblakeapparel.com.